Well, The Year of Living Happy, Finding Contentment and Connection in a Crazy World by Allie Worthington walks women through the ways in which busyness and fear can wreak havoc on their lives, especially their faith. This book is a field guide, basically, to being happy for anyone, which is good because she talks about women a lot here. But my first question to Allie was going to be, what about the dudes? So throughout her first two successful books, Breaking Busy and Fierce Faith, Allie Worthington has related to modern readers because many live their lives fueled by busyness and fear. With extensive market research and a deep understanding of reality, which kind of, you know, has to come into play in these kind of conversations, Allie is equipped to bring a message of happiness that comes from peace and contentment. Allie has consulted and advised Fortune 500 companies and small businesses, from tech companies to your favorite household brands. She shared her knowledge on eliminating self-imposed stress, balancing everyday life, and a career on the Today Show and Good Morning America. My first question to Allie is, when you were on the Today Show, did you happen to be on with my friend Kathy Lee?
I was, both times. She is one of my favorite humans.
She scares me a little bit.
How so?
Well, because there are very few people that have the testicular fortitude to get up in my grill, but she has no issues getting up in my grill.
Okay, I'm going to need to hear more about this.
No, moving along. Allie Worthington's on the line with us. She's written a book. We're going to talk about that right now. So I've said this before, and I don't know, it probably makes me more of a jerk, but I have a spiritual gift of pessimism and cynicism. And so when I read a book or hear a book about a book called The Year of Living Happy, like, I have a mini vomit happen in the back of my throat, right? Because, like, dudes don't want to talk about being happy. And dudes excel at sarcasm. That's our love language. But the problem is, Allie, that I'm at the point in my life where I realize I'm too dude, I'm too sarcastic, I'm too pessimistic, and I'm just not stinking happy enough. So maybe I should shut up and listen to someone like you.
Well, okay, first of all, let me say I totally get it, because I live with six dudes. So there's my husband and our five boys. So I completely get it. And it's been an interesting journey all about overcoming fear. And it was written toward in the middle of a really dark season in my life, honestly. And it was God who kept putting the word happy on me for my next book. And I thought, that's ridiculous. Christians don't write about happiness. We write about joy, right? Because we've all heard that happiness is secular and joy is, you know, what we should strive for as Christians, and happiness is fleeting, but we have deep joy. And as I researched it more and more, it's such a fascinating story, because I found that all of the original languages of Scripture, they don't separate happiness and joy at all. It's all the same thing. And that concept that happiness is worldly and joy is what we should have as believers, it only became popular in the past 100 years. And so I could kind of get really nerdy about it. And none of this is in the book, because the book is a field guide and it doesn't leave room for nerdiness. But it put me on this journey for a year of my life of going, okay, what does the Bible say about true happiness? And also, what does modern research say about it? So I took in the best of research plus, you know, all of Scripture and brought it together for a really easy to digest, you know, what are the little simple things we need to do every day to invest in ourselves to just feel better?
All right. So the first thing that I clicked on there was the everyday deal. And that's what I'm kind of slowly figuring out. Like, I'm 51 and this is the first year I've actually liked myself. Right? Mm-hmm. That's a long time to live without liking yourself. And so this process that you've been going through with the happiness thing, and I think there's self-discipline involved, and I think there's daily things that have to be involved. And people aren't going to do daily things or self-discipliney things unless they have hit some kind of awakening. Know what I mean?
Totally. Or I would also say, or unless people know that there's a huge payoff.
Oh, yeah.
And as a researcher, what I found, something that's really interesting is when people want to change their life, they will tend to find the most difficult, complex system ever. Like if you want to work out, you're not just going to join a gym. You're also going to sign up for really hard classes. If you want to eat healthier, you're going to take away everything you love and count your macros and weigh your food. And that would make me crazy. When actually what we really need to do is just tweak a few small things in our life and let the momentum build up from that to really change our life. But when we decide to make a change, normally it's we really want it badly, or we've hit rock bottom. So we decide, I'm going to make this 10 times harder than it needs to be and try to claw my way out of it.
Oh, man. Yep, you're right. You're right. Okay, so here's something that I've said a lot, and I don't know. I still kind of believe it, I think. So tell me how wrong I am, because you happen to hit me on a day where I'm willing to admit how incredibly wrong I am.
I like it. I like where this is going.
They're rare. They're very rare. Okay, so for me, happiness is cheap. Peace is a far more worthy pursuit. What do you think?
Okay. I get where you're coming from. This is where we're going to get nerdy. So, as I mentioned before, in Greek and Hebrew, there's no difference between joy and happiness. There's nothing scripturally that says happiness is fleeting and joy is what we should go for. It wasn't until Oswald Chambers, and I'm a huge fan of his, about 120 years ago, decided this concept that happiness was cheap and like peace and joy, that's what we should strive for. And it's just come into popular Christian culture, especially in North America, that now we accept that as gospel. But if you look through the writings throughout church history, even the Puritans, we never think of the Puritans as especially happy people. They write about happiness all the time.
Wow.
Yeah, and when we separate the concept of God with the concept of happiness, we're really undermining our entire Christian worldview. And what happens is we respond as humans to this natural desire for happiness that we all have, that I believe is God-given, but we send people out to try to find it in every way that they can't find it, because the only way you're truly going to find it is finding it through seeking God. I mean, you can look at celebrities, people who all of a sudden have power and access and money and everything they want. They hit rock bottom because they realize that doesn't truly make them happy. But just from a really practical level, if you look at somebody and you go, you know what, that person is so joyful, or that person is so happy, that person is so peaceful, all of those words can be interchanged. You never look at somebody and say, that person is so peaceful, but you know what? They're not happy. Or that person is so happy, but you know what? They're not peaceful. They're all kind of synonyms for the same good feeling. We never, when we are describing someone as joyful or happy, we never would say that person's joyful, but they sure aren't happy.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That just doesn't make sense. We're right. Splitting hairs that don't need to be split.
Okay, and I've heard it said numerous times by smarter people than myself that you cannot hang on to fear and peace, or fear and happiness at the same time. Do you get that, or is that just a bumper sticker?
I think it's a bumper sticker. I mean, I don't know. It's a popular bumper sticker. But, I mean, so, like, but that doesn't make it right. But I think about times in my own life when I've been in seasons where I feel pretty happy, things are going great, but do I still get scared about things on a day-to-day basis? Sure. Can I be happy about my life and feel good and positive, but there's a situation that scares me? Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Yeah. By the way, just want to recap here. Allie Worthington is who we're speaking to. She is a speaker, a business coach, an entrepreneur. She lives outside of Nashville with her husband, Mark, and their five sons, and a pampered rescue dog.
She is pampered. She's the only golden retriever that. Yeah, she does not fetch. She doesn't do anything. She's wonderful.
Allie has written this book, The Year of Living Happy: The Year of Living Happy, Finding Contentment and Connection in a Crazy World. Okay, let's talk about the small business owner. And I don't know, do we dare get into the female small business owner versus the male small business owner? Because in my experience, females and males think differently about a lot of things. And just for maybe the sake of anecdotal explanation, I know a female who owns a small business, and she is drowning. So what do you say to someone like her?
Well, I really like the question of how are men and women different as small business owners? Because I spend most of my day, every day, coaching small business owners. Here's the difference.
Yeah.
A male small business owner will say, what is this going to take for me to make this project successful? What do I need to do to make sure I hit my goals this year? A woman in that same situation will often go, is it okay for me to go for this? Is this okay? Should I go for it? Should I be in this situation? I think I'm going to try. Where a man's like, what walls do I need to knock down? We as women are in just the first and second generation of women who are even like socially allowed to be ambitious and to go for it. So I think for women, we want it. We're building companies. I mean, there's opportunity that's open for us in a way that's never been done before, but there's still a part of us that kind of holds ourselves back and we get stuck in our own head. So one of the biggest things for business women, no matter if they're starting their first company or they're in their third startup and they've been successful every time, is making sure that our thoughts and our mindset don't hold us back.
I think women, when it comes to a small business that is customer service oriented, are more apt to succeed because they're more apt to suss out the subtle nuances of customer service, whereas males tend to be a little more task oriented and bottom line driven, and in other words, they can be jerks more than women can when it comes to customer service. Am I just like a reverse sexist? What am I? Help me.
I see what you're saying. I see what you're saying. But here's the flip side of that, where women tend to be more empathetic and can relate better to their clients. Women have to be careful to have strong boundaries so they're not taken advantage of in that situation, because very often that means, you can't pay your invoice this month for all the products that you bought for me. We'll have an extra month. Well, that's lovely to do for your customer, but you have staff that you need to pay. So it kind of goes both ways.
The people that write about happiness or have happiness books tend to be not the doom and gloom sort of Enneagram 4 wallow in the dark shadows of the world, right? Like that's me. I'm a 4, and there's a scripture that says my people prefer the darkness over the light, and that's going to be on my grave. That's my epitaph. I prefer the darkness. I really do. And happy people have happy books. The people that are going to be buying your books are not the people that really need your book.
Yes and no. I get what you're saying. Now, here's the thing. I'm going to admit I am an Enneagram 7.
Oh.
I know. I knew you were going to say that when you told me you were 4. But what surprised people when I came out with this book is Breaking Busy and then Fierce Faith, they wrestle really tough subjects. Fierce Faith it may have a pink cover because I wanted to make it happy, but like, we're covering like fear of betrayal and overcoming fear that something's going to happen to your children and fear of loss and fear that you can't trust God. I mean, it's tough. And then all of a sudden I pop out with a Year of Living Happy and people went, what are you doing? This is too lighthearted. And I think that we need to make the decision to invest in our happiness. So for me, everyone that's gone along in the journey with me who maybe wouldn't necessarily connect with a happy message, they're like, well, let's give it a shot. We'll see what happens. But yeah, otherwise we're kind of preaching to the choir, because you're right. People who feel happier are the ones who want a happy book, or at least people who want to invest in their happiness are the ones who are going to purchase it. But fours are probably not my market.
No. Let's talk about an Enneagram 7, which is an enthusiast, giving mm-hmm. advice to someone, some Eeyore, like an Enneagram 4, when it comes to happiness. The medium is the message, right? Marshall McLuhan mm-hmm. nailed that phrase. So I'm going to buy it from you because you live it. It's like prosperity doctrine preachers. You don't want to have anybody who's preaching prosperity doctrine be broke. Those folks got to be rich. You got to have a rich exactly. pastor to sell prosperity doctrine. By the way, I don't believe in any of that stuff. But what I'm trying to say is I'm ready. I'm malleable. I believe it. You can sell me the happiness thing. Give me three things to pull my proverbial head out of my backside when it comes to happiness.
Sure. And these are all things that not only have a scriptural basis, but a research basis. So a lot of there's not a research study that has been done in the past 50 years that I haven't read preparing to write this. So I try to go at it really, really practically. What are the things that scripture backs up? And then what are the things that research backs up? The first, we've heard it before, but we tend to not practice it, is gratitude. We have to make the intentional decision every day to practice the discipline of gratitude. And I call it a discipline because it doesn't come easy to us, especially for people who are, we won't call them Eeyores. We'll call them more creative
okay.
and have a full range of emotions like the force. You have to really discipline yourself to go, I am going to force myself to look for things to be grateful for. When my kids were little, my youngest is 10 now, so we're in all stages. I would, as I tuck him in every night, I would say, what are three things that you're grateful for? And if you ask a boy that question, a boy will look at you like you have three heads. So I changed it and I said, okay, what are your three wins for the day? What are the things you did well? What are the things you enjoyed? Like, what are your big wins? And so I'm essentially tricking them into practicing gratitude every night. And so I do that with myself. What are my three big wins? What am I grateful for? And I force myself through the day to go, okay, this is going to be one of my wins, or this is going to be one of my wins. And when we practice that, we really change the way we view life, and we shift the lens of how we're perceiving everything through the day. So practicing the discipline of gratitude is huge. The second one is investing in relationships. From people who have been studied for 50 years in these massive studies, the one thing that will increase people's happiness and even their emotional and physical health is the quality of their relationships. You don't have to be friends with a large number of people, just a couple of close relationships with people who love you, people who are good to you, people who bring out the best in you. That is what is going to really, really make you happy. We've all heard the quote that, you know, the five people that you have around yourselves, those are the people who are going to determine your future. It's really important that the biggest voices in your life, the biggest mental block, I don't know what I'm saying, hold on, the biggest voices in your life and the loudest voices in your life are people who encourage you, who are life-giving, who bring out the best in you. If all of your friends are always telling you that the world is terrible and the world's about to come to an end, you're just not going to be happy. So you want to be grateful. You want to invest in your relationships. And then here's something really simple and practical. I like to bring in the practicality of it. This is not scriptural, by the way, but I could make it scriptural if you give me a few minutes.
Okay.
There is a research study that said that happiness, you know, money can't buy happiness. However, one thing that buys happiness is if you use your money to pay people to do the things you hate to do. So that's mowing your lawn. Maybe it's, you know, ironing your shirts. Maybe it's delegating things in the office. Whatever it is, if you use the resources you have, that will actually make you happier. So can I make it scriptural? Yes, I could talk about how Jethro, Moses's father-in-law, taught him to delegate. So there you go. Because Moses was going to drive himself into the ground because he did it all himself.
Yeah. Wow. I've grown up in a funeral home. I was a pastor for years, and I am a hospital chaplain. I've been around death my whole life. And the one thing that can be really irritating to people when they're grieving is when someone really cheery comes along and just wants them to be cheery by osmosis. And the reality is most people want to pound, you know, they want to throat punch that person. So
yeah.
So can you give some warnings to the morning dolphins of the world? You know, they wake up crack of dawn and they're just chirping away, and they go to a funeral and a visitation and they just chirp away. Like, how do you tell someone that irritating to dial it down?
I think you would reference the book of Proverbs and talk about, hey, even in the morning, if you come out singing, your neighbors are going to take it as a curse. Dial it down. You know, I mean, it's just like, I think when we think about happiness, sometimes we do think about those people who are just always cheerful and always on and always chatty and in your face and, you know, want to throw a parade. And for me, that is not my perspective on happiness. Mm. So for me, happiness looks a lot more like peaceful contentment. To me, a life of happiness is, you know, snuggling on the couch with the kids and watching a movie. It's definitely not a parade. A life of happiness is when you go to bed at night and your head hits the pillow, you don't dread what comes tomorrow. Mm. You know that God is in control, and there may be some things that are difficult. There may be some things we have to work through, but life just feels good. That to me is what real happiness is.
Okay, Allie Worthington, she's the author of The Year of Living Happy, Finding Contentment and Connection in a Crazy World. Allie, you're, from what I understand, a Christian woman, a Jesus lady. And so I need to ask you this question. Can people who aren't into Jesus find the same level of happiness that all these happy, shiny Jesus people seem to have?
I don't believe so. I think that people that don't know Jesus can have momentary feelings of happiness. But life comes at you all the time, and there's always something new in life that will try to take your legs out from underneath you. I'm sure you've heard people say, if you're not in a storm now, you're going into one, or you're just coming out of one. Mm-hmm. The good time, happy feelings that people may have who don't know the Lord momentarily, they don't last when you go into the storm. But it's only those of us whose faith is rooted in the Lord, those of us who are filled with His Spirit, that have the strength and the discernment and the wisdom and the viewpoint to be able to hold on to our happiness, because our happiness has deep roots because we're rooted in Him.
Okay, so in contrast to that, what do you say to the Jesus person who has had some pretty crappy things go down in their life, and then here comes Allie Worthington writing a book about happiness and they want to chuck it out the window?
Great question. One side note, researchers have shown that our happiness stays at a set level. So whether bad things have happened to us, whether we win the lottery, within about a year from whatever good or bad thing happens to us, our happy levels will go back to what they were before that event happened.
Hmm.
The only difference for that is if someone goes through a very painful or a traumatic event, that's going to cause emotional damage that we do carry on into the future. If that is the case, I believe that everyone who goes through that should seek counseling, should seek Christian counseling to be able to go through a healing process. Because when we've been through a traumatic experience, when we're carrying emotional wounds, we have to do the hard work of healing those before we even have the capacity to feel happiness again. But barring that, if it's just everyday life, generally people have a natural happiness set point that no matter what happens, good or bad, we're going to go back to eventually. If you study lottery winners, for example, you think those would be the happiest people ever. Lottery winners, after a year or two, the happy level, it goes back to exactly what it was. If who knows if they're living in, you know, an apartment with roaches a year before, whatever they're like, wake up in the morning and your happiness set point is, they go back to it, because so much of our happiness is actually just set in our thoughts. It's set in how we view the world, what our expectations are of the world. And a lot of it is the messages that we tell ourselves as we go throughout the day. I mean, a lot of people carry messages in their head, you know, subconsciously all the time. You're telling yourself, I'm not good enough. This isn't going to work. I'm a failure. Mm-hmm. You know, nobody's on my side. And when we carry these messages in our mind and we see the world that way, it's almost impossible to make room for happiness. So much of happiness just has to do with having the courage to say, I'm going to look at the parts of myself that may not be, you know, firing at all cylinders, and I'm going to get some help for that and to be able to kind of live on a new level. Because a lot of the happiness that we can seek, we don't have to do a lot of hard work. There's not a lot of big systems that we have to do. We don't have to just pull ourselves up by the bootstraps and announce we're going to be happy. Sometimes it's just the little habits throughout the day that's making us less happy or more happy.
Yeah, for me, it was something that helped me pull, I keep saying pull my head out of my butt, but yeah, I was just becoming way too negative, way too cynical, just a jerk. So I had to figure out many ways, different ways to de-jerkify myself. And one thing that I was conscious of was I needed to invite more a light into my life. And when I say light, I mean people that leak happiness. They just mm-hmm. ooze it. Like it just falls off of them. And not just, you know, like a Mary Kay rep kind of thing. You know what I mean?
Because that's just annoying.
Oh my goodness. But my point is, if I bring people that I want to be more like into my life, then who you hang with is what you become.
Totally. Yeah.
Allie Worthington, what piece of research did you find, discover, uncover that you just went, what?
Honestly, the research about our relationships, that the one defining factor in everyone's life, whether you're happy or not, whether you feel like you live a life of joy and meaning or not, is the quality of your relationships. That to me was really surprising. And then I looked at it through the light of scripture. The most important thing we can ever have in our life is a relationship to God through Jesus. And what is our message as Christian? Love God and love others. Like that's the secret to everything. And so, of course, as humans, the one defining factor that scientists can find for the past 50 years of studies of whether people are happy or not, is the quality of their relationship. So it made me take another look at my relationship with my husband, my relationship with my kids, my relationship with my girlfriends, and go, I need to make sure every day I'm doing something to invest in it, to make it stronger. Because if there's one thing that's going to make me happy in this life, other than my relationship with God, it's my relationship with the people who are around me.
Dude, you've totally won me over. Thank you. I mean, thank you. The year of living, and I just called you dude. The year of living happy,
like
finding contentment and a connection in a crazy world by Allie Worthington. The website, of course, is allieworthington.com. There's two L's in Allie, allieworthington.com. What a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you, Allie.
Well, thank you so much, and I'm so happy to have won you over.
All right, we'll be right back. Stay with us. Triumphantly.